right, advertiser time. So, first off, our OG sponsor, Sinister Jerky. Use code KINGDOM, that's KINGDOM, at checkout at www.sinisterjerky.com. Grab yourself a nice little discount. And also, this podcast is powered by Balls Garara. Grab life by the balls. And with that said, let's go on to the podcast. All right, welcome back to Castle Comps, episode 92. I know, holy shit. Today we have a good one. Today we have a gamer. We have a Navy veteran. We got the one, the only, Charging Charlie. Charlie, how are you doing today?
Well, today.
I have to know from somebody that went through similar pain and anguish that I went through the wonderfulness that is the military and the Navy especially, what from your service do you look upon? Like, what comes back and hits you in a way that's strange? Like, do you see unpolished brass and just get fucking flashbacks to horrible field days? Like, what is the one thing that you've taken with you in your civilian life?
Oh, I think plenty. Like, being able to, I was an aircraft mechanic in the Navy, so I was able to, like, fix a lot of things. I had been working with tools for the 8 years that I was in, and I have more knowledge of tools than some men that I work with right now, and being able to, like, tell them, like, hey, this is how this works, or, oh, this is, like, a soldering iron, this is, like, good tools, or these are, like, snap-ons, so...
Totally.
I think that's, like, the biggest takeaway.
That you were looking for, or did you get sold to it by a recruiter? Like, what led you down the aircraft mechanic pathway?
So, I knew I did not want to be, no offense to HMs, but I knew I didn't want to be an HM or an LS, or I chose to be in the aircraft side. Totally. So, one of the crazy things that not a lot of people who are joining the military know is that they actually have a little bit more control, or actually a whole lot more control with what careers they can choose in the military. Because their recruiters are just, like, driving and not really telling them, like, hey, what do you want to do in the military, or what you see yourself doing in the military? Right. So a lot of people have the ability to research what jobs that they wanted, and that's what I did. So I looked at jobs in the military, and I'm like, do not even call me back. Like, this is after the ASVAB, and I've gotten my score already. And do not give me a call back until something in aircraft-related field
is available. So you put your foot down, which is something a lot of recruiters, they just are not used to, or they kind of bully some kids out of, be like, hey, look, you can just change your job at boot camp, sign up for this, when that's not always the fact. Like, unfortunately, it can feel like a car salesman kind of relationship, you know, recruitee and recruiter. So it's cool that you were able to tell your recruiter, nope, this is what I want, and this is what I'm doing.
Yep, exactly. And they're just so easy to just, they have quotas, like, every month, like, you know this, like, they have quotas every month, so they're just, like, pushing people, like, hey, do this, I want you going to boot camp on this month, or this is the only jobs available right now, and in reality, like, you can wait
right
a couple of days, and a whole new list will come out,
because,
you know?
To your recruiter, like, yes, you are an individual, but you're also a bullet for their eval. So if, like, this one's going to push me past an MP to an EP, I need you to sign. I don't care if you're a cook. I don't care if you don't want to be a cook. You're going to sign that goddamn contract.
And they make it sound like cross-rating is a piece of cake. It's such a pain in the butt.
Oh, God.
For some jobs.
Yes, and I felt bad for all the undez kids I met along the way. We're just like, yep, I had to wait 3 years. Like, my God. And then they're finally in A school, and they're like, yep, once I'm done with this, I have to pretty much reenlist if I actually want to work in this job. And for anyone who doesn't know, undesignated is when you sign them Navy without a contract, without a job code, and you pretty much go to a ship, and you end up doing fucked up things. Like, you know, with boatswain's mates. Like, I had a friend who was there, and he said his first day on the ship, he went down to, like, you know, where all the boatswain's mates hang out, and there was just one dude in there with a pizza, and he knew it was a new guy just by his attire and the lack of ribbons. So this this BM chief decided to fuck with him. So the first thing that he experienced in the Navy, big Navy, quote unquote, was walking into a room with a guy in a pizza box. He's like, hey, you want some pizza? And he's like, oh, of course, chief. And then the chief was like, and then you want to fuck? And he got so, like, scared of neighbors, he, like, dropped the pizza on the ground.
Oh, that's messed up.
That's big Navy funny. For you. So... with
undead or airmen undead, like we made them get like exhaust samples from an aircraft, and they're like, how are we supposed to do that? And we're like, oh, here's a couple trash bags. And then these two, oh, sweet little summer children went in the back of an aircraft, like trying to like scoop up exhaust.
That is so
and came back with like a bag of air in our shop, and we're like, oh, you got it? And we're just like trying to hold in our laughter, and they're like, yeah, we filled them up as best as we can. We're just busted out laughing.
I've heard of that one before. I've also heard of turn signal fluid. That's another one I've heard from like motor pool guys. So that's hilarious. You guys have that kind of fun with the newbies in your community. So speaking of communities, you guys share spaces with the ordnance crew who run around saying, if you ain't an ordnance, you ain't shit. Now, do you guys take offense to that when you hear that bullshit?
Because like how I see it, the way that they worded it is like, you ain't ordnance, you ain't shit, so you are shit.
Right? Like, I hate everything about it. I hate that they say it constantly. I hate that it's their motto. And I hate that they're so like, ugh, about it. They're like, bro, what the fuck?
There's so many like jokes around it too, because it's like when someone goes into like third class or they became like AO3 and you're like, oh, you can count to four now?
That's a big ask.
It's like 1, 2, 3. It's usually 1, 2, 3 lift.
Right.
So they're like, oh, this person counted to four, so they promoted this person. They're smart enough to be promoted.
I mean, the Navy is...
No hate on the AOs. I love you guys.
Oh, yeah. It's all love within the communities. Like, dude, HM, we catch shit from everyone, physically and literally. People come to us with the worst things. There's a reason we're called Pecker Checkers, and part of my job as Prev Med is I had to deal with STDs, and when you're dealing with a bunch of Marines, STDs are on the menu constantly.
Oh, my Lord.
So, were you ship-based? I think it's safe to say you probably were. Is that correct?
I was not, actually. I am the driest sailor that I know. I was with an expeditionary squadron out in Washington.
That is awesome. Well, congratulations, so Mark.
Them.
Safe from floating high schools. Mark, safe from floating prisons. I'm sure you've heard many stories of that nonsense.
Oh, absolutely. All I needed to see, honestly, like, I live in San Diego, right? So I've been on the Midway, the USS Midway Museum. All I need to see is those, like, sleeping racks. I'm like, nah, fam, not for me.
You don't like feeling like you're asleep in a coffin, Charlie? That's not for you.
No. So there's like three levels to it, right? At the bottom level, you're at the level of people's feet.
It's true.
And we're people that are working in a boat like constantly. You're working up until like your port, right? So everybody's feet and their socks and their all that sweat is just like cooking in there and like just, you know...
Our one-foot enjoyer listener is loving all of this description.
You're welcome, guys.
I know you're out there, you one weird foot enjoyer person who's listening. Oh, yeah, but it's the berthing areas and those things, they're just miserable. And then just the fucked up stuff that goes on in there, the gambling, the fucked up weird stories and things. It's like, yeah, I've seen the weirdest things I've ever seen in my life on field ops of Marines and also on ships with random ships that I got assigned to for like brief periods of time. It's just definitely it's a hard to explain situation. Now, being... in that kind of mobile unit, did you find yourself deployed a lot or getting like deployment workups and going through all that fun?
Yes, actually. So I think the most fun of being in an expeditionary squadron is that we fly straight to like where the missions are or to where our trainings are.
Right.
So my unique situation is that I came into the squadron just as we were decommissioning the Prowlers and we were commissioning and learning the Growlers. So we're transitioning from an old aircraft from like old ejection seats to like a newer aircraft with new ejection seats. And the first time that we were able to deploy as a Growler squadron was a very turbulent one, but a very exciting one. Because you're seeing all our hard work for like that 1 to 1.5 years of just laboring and learning the new stuff while decommissioning the old ships. And we're ready to fly out to our first training as a Growler squadron. That was actually so much fun. Like I really love that. And being able to see Japan for the first time.
It's so crazy, those kinds of things that you like participate in these scenarios, because yeah, it's hard at work. It feels like it's never ending work. And then when it happens, it's such a weird mixture of like pride and sad that it's over, even though it sucked.
Yeah.
So I agree.
With
that being said, do you have a sea story that you would like to share of a fucked up moment or a funny moment that you just probably will never forget until your deathbed?
Oh, God. It's... All right. So when it comes to work, like, a lot of our job is, like, critical. And then that's just a job to me. I think, like, the most exciting stories and the things that I will always remember are, like, things that happen, like, outside of work.
Right.
And it's usually, like, I was younger, and it's our first deployment. We're in the middle of, like, Misawa, Japan. This is, like, icy, middle of the winter Japan. So we had experimented on what's called a habusaki. So for your listeners who have not heard of habusaki, this is sake with a snake inside. That's just, like, in there.
That sounds dope as fuck. That's just like tequila with the worm, only much more dangerous.
So we were advised by the person that sold it to us, which was a legit shop. It wasn't like some sketch. I made it sound like it was sketchy, but it's not. It's like an actual store. You know, lady was super nice. So we were advised not to like take more than like 3 shots. But we were sailors, right? We were like
that's
early
a challenge
sailors,
when
like
you're a
exactly.
Sailor. When somebody tells you that kind of shit, you look at them and you drink 5 because you're like that.
Yeah, exactly. So we were drinking like trying to remember what it's called, a chuhais. So which is like it's like a canned alcoholic drink in Japan, and they're so good and they taste so good. So I have like a green apple chuhai, and then we have like some whiskey on the side, and we have somebody's drinking wine, and then we're drinking like habusaki. So me and the girls decided that we wanted to go out into the snow, make snow angels, and there's a lake kind of within the base of Misawa. We decided to jump into an icy lake.
Sounds
it was absolutely
about right.
Cold. So yes, we came back, made more snow angels, and then started drinking again. Like throughout the night, it's like I started puking blood.
Oh shit, that took a turn.
So yes, that took a weird turn. So it wasn't until the day after that we're like, oh, we did this, we did that. You know, being like the dumb 20s, early 20 something girls that we were. They're like, you guys should not have jumped in that lake. And we're like, yeah, I know. We could have died of hypothermia. They're like, no, because there's like unexploded bombs in that lake. because the Japanese had like apparently used that lake to like test some bombs like back in like World War II. And some of them have never detonated. And we're like, oh, shit. And they're like, and then what else happened? I was like, oh yeah, I started puking blood. They're like, did you have more than 3 shots of the habusaki? Like, oh, absolutely.
I like how this is just a known rule with everyone else. Like, you never take more than 3 shots of the habusaki. What are you doing?
And it's like, well, some stores are saying like they don't do that because it's very potent. And you're like, I don't know. I was dumb. I was having fun with our friends. And I didn't care, you know?
That habusaki lady is probably famous Navy-wide, just like the dragon lady who cuts her hair at boot camp. Probably everybody there knows her. Like, oh, yeah, the habusaki lady. Don't
it's
do more
so
than
crazy
three,
how it
die.
Looks. the thing is, like, we went off base and we're just like, oh, yeah, let's try chuhais because apparently they're really good. They taste just like juice. And then it's just rows and rows of, like, different kinds of habusaki. And it's so cool how these big bottles would just have, like, a whole snake in there. And we're like, for getting one of those.
It's also crazy how cheap the alcohol is in that country in particular as compared to the States.
I'm trying to remember how much for like the Chuhais. I could be wrong. My memory probably is not serving me right. About 150 yen.
Okay.
So 150 yen or 200 yen, I'd say.
That was Japan.
It could be wrong.
The coolest place you got to go.
I think it's definitely Japan. I enjoyed it so much. So we were in Misawa, which is like the part of Aomori Prefecture, which is the northernmost part of like mainland. And it's very provincial. So you can notice the difference between how people act, a little bit about the difference in their languages as well.
Right.
And
the culture from, like, shock is real, I'm sure.
Exactly. From like people in Tokyo, from like the city, Japanese.
So were you a fan of Japanese culture before this? Like, did you go in this, like, I love Japanese food, alcohol, like anime and all that fun stuff? Or was it just completely like a new experience fully?
Oh, absolutely. And I love anime. I grew up watching anime, like even when I was living back in the Philippines. I watched anime growing up. I still watch anime now, but it just comes in waves, you know? Right. Like I would watch anime for a full month. That's all I'll watch. And then it just dies out.
So you're a binge anime person. You're like, I'm off the wagon. And you're like, oh, did you catch this new show? And then you're a junkie for a month and then you're back off the wagon.
Mm-hmm.
That's how
it is for me now.
It comes in waves. I totally get that. So this next question is a hard-hitting question, probably the hardest-hitting question we're going to ask today. Charging Charlie, were you a card-carrying member of the Mafia?
A what?
Of the that's the best answer to that question I have heard.
What?
The Filipino Mafia in the Navy. Were you a card-carrying
member? Oh, the Filipino Mafia. Well,
I thought you were saying what? Like you were saying, I don't belong to them. I don't know what you're talking about, which is the right answer.
Or maybe that's what I meant.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You're just playing it cool.
What Mafia? I was like, I'm not keeping like lumpia in my pockets or some pancit in my bag or, you know.
I have a funny
story. No, absolutely not.
About the Filipino Mafia. So for those of you who don't know, there's a lot of Filipino people in the Navy, especially, and also in the contractors we deal with out of country. So when I was in Africa, this little country called Djibouti, we were living in Connex boxes, and we had to share this Connex box with a neighbor, or like a roommate kind of deal. And you know, being in a metal box in the desert, it's already uncomfortable, let alone when you're sharing a very small place with a person. So me being somebody who got to like do food inspections and all that stuff, I actually got to get with one of the guys who was in charge of berthing, the KVR contractor. And I bought him a spit roasted pig. And I was just like, I don't have a roommate for the remainder of my deployment. And he was just like, yes. So yes, I am well aware of drug deals with the Mafia.
Yep. We'll take care of you.
Did you have any such drug deals yourself?
Not quite. Okay. I think when I went into the military or when I checked into my shop and my squadron, they're like, oh yeah, the jokes are like thrown around like, oh, you're going to be chief in no time. I was like, huh? And then I found out that there is like two or three like Filipino chiefs in our squadron. And I was like, oh, that's why. It's like, to me, it was always like a joke in passing, but not like somehow like the Mafia expectations from me were not as high as from what I've been hearing on ships.
Yeah, that's when it gets real. Like once you're secluded in a place, like in the middle of nowhere on a ship, that's when those kinds of weird games become more prevalent. It's hilarious. I've seen it on a few occasions, but it's one of those things. It's just very prevalent in the HM community. And that was my next question to you. So a lot of Filipino people I knew who went HM, which is medical, for those of you who might not know, they went that route because of that's what their family was like kind of pushing them to, because, you know, people in their family were nurses and successful. And I was wondering, did you experience any of those kinds of pressures from your family when you were talking about joining the Navy in particular?
No, my mom did not want me to join at all. My
So.
parents did not want me to join at all. I am the very first member of my family who is a member of any armed services
And
or any military.
what led you to that decision? Because that's a hard jump to make, especially if it's one of those things where your family's not exactly amped on the idea.
It was, I think I moved to the United States in 2010 and was really trying to go for a job because like I went to school in the Philippines as well, and I moved out here when I was 20, and I had found and I knew I wanted to go to school out here in the United States as well, and I'm just like kind of lost because everything is just so expensive, or you have to take in loans, or
Oh yeah, we're a
I don't know,
society built
it
on
was really
debts.
hard.
It's hard to do anything without
Exactly.
incurring a shit ton of debt. So the military totally makes sense. Like, oh, free college? Why the fuck not?
Yeah, it was really hard for me to just like find a path for me as I'm trying to navigate my way into this whole new culture.
Right. And that age is already
And
hard enough, let alone being in a country that's completely different. Like, the culture shock must have taken weeks to get over.
exactly. It was, oh, it took years. It really took years. So at that point, I think I was already in the United States for about a year to a year and a half. And then I made a decision. And I mean, I still did my research. Like, this is what I wanted to do. I am not in the medical field at all. Like, when I was back in the Philippines, I was industrial engineering.
Nice.
And I knew I can work with something that has like a complicated system. Like, I knew how machines work, and I don't know how, I can confidently say I did not know any tools. I did not know how to handle tools before joining the military. And then when I became an AME, that's when I learned. And being able to diagnose, troubleshoot, those were actually
And
really
now
fun.
you're a
So I'm
subject
super
matter
glad.
expert who's like showing people who've been around tools their whole life how certain things work. That's super cool.
Exactly.
So, my next question to you, Charlie, is how do you go from like the Philippines to the United States and then to Japan? Like, what was the biggest culture shock that you experienced? Was it the move here? Was it going to Japan? Was it going to any other country, whether it be, near or far? Like, what would you say your gnarliest thing of culture shock was, and what was the moment you noticed it?
Like out here in the United States, when I moved to the country, it was how expressive people are with their intentions. Like Americans are very vocal. You guys know how to advocate for yourselves, and you guys easily just can talk to people, to strangers. That's never a thing. Like go to like most Asian countries, you're not going to be able to like strike a conversation with a stranger. You don't just talk to somebody like at, I don't know, like at a movie theater in a line. Like you don't just do that. We mind our own business out in Asia.
People are more
But out
private.
here, exactly, people are just like, we'll just talk to you. And that's, it ties into a lot of like American values, wherein if you don't speak up, you don't say something, then people will not know what your intentions and your boundaries are. And that's actually one of the hardest things that I learned out here in the United States is advocating for myself, speaking up for myself, and telling people my intentions and telling people my boundaries as well.
Oh, I'm
Because I've
sure the
just
Navy
always
helped
been
with that
quiet.
greatly because
Oh,
over there, if you
absolutely.
don't say anything, you're gonna have a bad time.
Absolutely. And it's even harder, like, because like I'm a female in the military, not to mention I am a small Asian person. Like the chances of me being seen and heard are very minimal. Not to mention I have a soft voice.
No, so I totally
So
get that, especially when you're working in like a shop that's loud in nature. Like you guys are doing like metal on metal contact work, pulling engines out of planes, doing all sorts of crazy maintenance shit. So yeah, it's already loud on top of that. And if you're not like used to being loud to be heard, it's probably very easy to have people just not hear you.
yep.
Did you get
And
really
I
good with
think that's just like
charades?
at
Were you like learning sign
the well, we
language?
do a lot of hand signals in the military, like especially on the flight line where everybody's like wearing like hearing protection and no one can really hear you. If we have to troubleshoot something like out on the flight line, we either like, you know, open up our ear protections and start yelling at each other's ears to be able to be heard, or we do hand signals just to be able to get somebody's attention.
Totally.
So, I'm sure you've seen like some videos like out on flight lines, like, you know, your plane captain's like doing hand signals, and you have your final checkers doing hand signals, your safety guy doing hand signals, pilots doing hand signals.
Oh yes, yes, it's, I've definitely seen some of that. I've learned some of it, like, yeah, especially in places where you're in berthing and it's like the lights are always off because you have people who are like working at constant things, so you can't really be loud. So you just have your red lizard light on your head and you're just making hand signals to your like bunk mate or whatever. Yeah, I remember those days. Tons of fun in a scenario I'll probably never experience again. And some moments it's awesome, but, you know, some moments you miss it. Like, when it's hot outside, sometimes I think to myself, it's like, hey, remember it was 130 degrees in Iraq? This is nothing. And then, you know, it makes the day a little easier. Now, do you have those moments of clarity when you're like, oh, man, this sucks? And you remember something that you went through, and it's like, oh, that was so much shit here. This is great.
Oh, it wasn't until I got out. It's like, there are some situations, like, I was full-time when I was becoming a software engineer, when I was getting trained in boot camp, like software engineering boot camp is what I meant. So when I was getting trained there, like something sucked, or like when I was a civilian working for the Department of Defense, I was like, there are days of like, oh, this fucking sucks. But then I was like, oh, at least I'm not doing all this bullshit in my uniform, or getting yelled at by some, you know, by some chief who doesn't even have a freaking clue of what you're doing.
Right.
He's just there to yell at people. You know, it's like, there are some moments of like, oh, thank God, at least I'm not in the military anymore.
Oh, 100%. Every time I walk into a building, I'm like, oh my God, I have my hat on. I'm just like, wait a minute, who gives a fuck? Like, the moments like that are great. So
I'm like, oh, I can actually, like, you know, I was still an aircraft mechanic when I got out. I was a work lead for the ordnance shop out here in North Island. And I'm like, oh, thank God I can do this in like either yoga pants or like in jeans and like something comfortable and not like, you know, not just in uniform.
Not cami pajamas. So when in Washington, do you miss Washington? Or is it one of those things where you're in Cali
beautiful.
And you love it?
Oh, it's beautiful out there. I do not like summers out here. I mean, I know it's California, but I don't like summers. I don't like excessive heat.
And traffic.
The sun irritates me. The traffic irritates me. It's expensive out here. Although California geographically is beautiful.
Oh, yeah. If you like
hiking, I miss Washington, though.
This state has everything because it's so goddamn big. But yeah, Washington's a very unique, awesome feel.
It's beautiful out there. It's called the Evergreen State because everything's just green, like, especially out in Whidbey Island. So I wasn't in Seattle. So I wasn't in like the busy dizziness of the city. So I was like up where it's like nice and calm and quiet and foresty with like Deception Pass, like just outside of the base. And it's just, I love it. I love it out there. I do miss it.
Nice.
But San Diego is really nice too. Like, I like to be able to just, I know I hate the sun, but I go to the beach sometimes. I go to the beach, go hike. I can go up in the mountains. I was just in Mammoth the other month, and I went snowboarding out there.
And you're close to Joshua Tree. Like, you have so many. Like,
yeah.
You want to go to desert, mountains, forest, oceans. You got everything here, which is kind of cool.
I agree. Food scene out here is amazing, too.
Oh, that's my favorite part, is this the Mexican food. The amazing, like, diversity of food, which is one of those things where when you're on a military base and you're like, oh, what's for dinner? Oh, macaroni and fuck it. That compared to, like, you
exactly
know, an endless amount of whatever the fuck you could imagine. You want chicken and waffles? Boom. You want pad thai? Boom. You name it, it's available. So moving a little bit off topic from the military question line. So gaming. Where did gaming start for you? Were you always a fan? Did you get introduced to it a little later in life? Like, when did the journey start for you?
making me feel old. I started with the NES.
Same. I am okay. Also, I'm 35, and I'm about to be 35. I'm not even 35 yet. I'm already fucking saying I'm older than I am, and I'm about to have my second kid. I feel old as fuck, Charlie.
I am 33, turning 34 this year. So I started with the NES. My older sister was always Mario. I was always Luigi. And I embraced it. I love Luigi.
You have a special place in your heart for Luigi, then.
Yes.
Have you seen
So from
Luigi
that point
movie?
On, I have not. I saw the D&D movie, and I was told that... wait, Luigi movie?
Oh, sorry, I meant the Mario movie. I said the Mario movie?
Okay.
I'm high.
So
I'm sorry.
I heard it's good. Oh, no, it's all good. It's all good. I knew what you meant. I got you. I have it. I'm a hermit, though. But I will definitely make time to go watch it.
Nice. We got a little sidetrack. Continue on. You were saying, so you started with the NES. You were always Luigi. Sorry for sidetracking you. Please continue.
Oh, no, you're good. And then when we got our PC, I was playing Heroes of Might and Magic 3.
Oh, that game fucked. I remember that game.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And I was playing Age of Empires, Age of Mythology, up until, like, when I'm trying to remember if this was in, like, either middle school or I was already in high school that I played Dota with some friends.
Okay, that game.
We would go to like LAN. We would have LAN parties, or we would go to like the nearest computer shop, and we would play Dota.
So you got pretty heavily into Dota then.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for Dota,
handheld devices, I played Game Boy, like the yellow brick Game Boy.
Oh, I had a green brick Game Boy, and then when the Game Boy Color came out, I had the Kiwi green one. That, and then when I got an N64. I wanted the neon plastic green one so bad, but it never happened. I got a controller that was neon green, see-through plastic, but I never got the see-through plastic console, and it's haunted me my whole life, Charlie. That's why I'm the broken man you talked to today. So
I can't. I only had the yellow one. It's like the OG. It's like brickier than like your translucent. Or the translucent ones. Like, I saw one of my classmates had, like, the purple one. I was like, oh, God, I wish I had that.
Right? And it was funny because that old one would take 4 AA batteries. So it was always a bitch to, like, reload that when your battery was going low. And you had this red light. And the red light would just dim as the battery died. So you could just see your life slowly ending. And you're like, please, God. You'd be taking batteries out of remotes and whatever you could around the house. And piss off everybody.
Yes.
Like, why are there no batteries? I'm like, I'm sorry.
I know I would have the I would replace it with like the dying batteries, so it would take them like a little bit of time
to realize
that the batteries on the remote are dead.
Then they'd probably know immediately after you got caught the first time.
So, yes.
So what was your Game Boy game? Were you like a Pokemon person? Were you into something else? Like, what was your Game Boy game?
Yellow version was my first one. On that one, and then I got silver. So I remember playing gold version as well, but I remember that yellow and silver were the ones I truly enjoyed.
Who is your starter? Is it Charmander, Squirtle, Bulbasaur, or Pikachu? Who's your preferred starter?
Well, yellow version, I believe this is just like
you have to start with Pikachu.
Through.
Unfortunately,
you have to start with Pikachu. I was a Charmander girl.
Totally, yeah. That seemed to be a lot of people's route, especially because the game didn't make you encounter fire types until way later. It's like, yeah, you can somehow reach a Ponyta if you go like to the way where the Elite Six are, and you don't go too far and you just hang out in the grass. Like, sometimes you get lucky and see a Ponyta, but for the most part, yeah, there's like no fire types until you get to that fucking island. And you're like, no, there's Magmar, the fucking duck with the butt head.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
What was
exactly.
What was your favorite Pokemon of the 150 that wasn't a starter?
Oh, God, that's a great question. I'm not into Pokemon for the longest time now, so I probably don't remember them anymore.
Oh, it's totally fine.
I'm truly sorry.
Oh, no, don't worry about it. It's like, I'm asking you to reach into the recesses of your mind from like 20 plus years ago. If you can't remember the name of some random cartoon-like video game character, I'm not going to take offense. It's all good.
It's Charlie. Like, I remember like in Silver, that's when they... introduced like the legendary Pokemons to, and then I got into like the movie. I didn't get into the Pokemon cards because I think at that point I already had like a PlayStation and I was addicted to that a little bit more than like the handheld device.
Right. So when you were getting into Pokemon, did you see all like the spin-off shows and the shows that were kind of like it, like the card gaming Yu-Gi-Oh or the Digimon and like the ones like that? Did you like look at those and be like, what the fuck is this? Or were you a fan of all of it?
I was not a fan of Digimon. I'm so truly sorry for the Digimon fans out there and the Yu-Gi-Oh fans out there. I did play Magic the Gathering as well in high school and
Hell
college.
Yeah. What was your color combo for MTG?
So MTG, I did Merfolk. I did Zoo. I made some sort of like Twilight, like vampire, like
you had thematic
quite
decks.
A while ago.
That's fucking awesome. Mostly when I yes. ask people, they're like, "I'm a blue player because I like to say no," or like, you know, "I'm a green player because I like monsters." Big monsters. Usually that's like the answers I get. But you're like, oh, I like themes. I'm
proud of my Zoo deck, though. My Zoo deck was tricolor, and it slaps. I don't know how much it slaps now. It's been such a long time since I played it. I think I still have them.
That way that game runs, it's just like, you know, buy new cards, buy new cards, buy new cards. So they probably made it so there's like a card that does exactly what yours does, only slightly better, to make you want to go buy the new card or something
yep.
like that. That's just, yeah, it's cool because it's always updating, but at the same time, it sucks because it's also updating. So you make this awesome deck, and then it's just like, oh, in two seasons, it's going to be useless.
Yep, and you have to keep on updating. You have to keep spending that money.
Right? It's just like a drug dealer, you know? The first taste is free, and then everything after
yes.
that is just horrible, crippling debt and pain. Speaking of horrible, crippling debt and pain, how's your Tarkov stash doing at this wipe? Is it feeling it? Is it having a good time?
It's terrible. Terrible. It is absolutely terrible. I had to challenge myself to solo up until I hit level 42 in Max Traders.
I love
at the expense
soloing.
Of my mental. Really?
I love it.
Oh man, how are you? How are you not going insane? I am. I lost my mental stability, which is already questionable even before like I started playing Tarkov.
Well, Charlie, I'm not playing anymore this wipe. I pretty much said, fuck that. I'm going to take a wipe off because like my mental got so fucked. So I'd say not great on that part. But being a solo player, like I like to be sneaky. So I would do night raids and I would like my favorite thing to do was to come up on a group of like two and like, you know, take one out and then like hide in the darkness and slowly maneuver. Like I was a sneaky snake. In the dark. That's how I played as a solo. But when you have certain quests where you're like forced to go somewhere and do one thing, be like, oh, pocket watch, I'm just, my ass is out, guys, please don't smack it. Like that kind of thing never ended well for me. So
yep.
you get it. Yeah. I love scav runs. I'm just going to say that. Scav runs kept me going. That was my lifeblood. So for this current wipe, Charlie, where does this wipe stack up for you? Is this your favorite wipe you've played? Is this your least favorite wipe you've played? Is it somewhere in between? Like, how's this one stacking up for you?
In all honesty, I feel like this is my worst wipe yet. Just because I played in a way that I'm not used to. This is my fourth wipe.
Right.
And having to solo was mentally and emotionally taxing, I have to say. Because my money, my rubles are probably at an average 200,000.
And you probably
That's
feel a lot
what
more
I'm
paranoid, especially if you're used to the group play. It's probably so weird for you being solo at first.
Mm-hmm. But I learned a lot too, like even soloing. I've learned how to pick fights. It's like, hey, if I'm seeing like a two man, maybe I can take them on. I'm seeing a 3+ man. I was like, okay, this is not, and I'm running a VPO 215. It's like, this is probably not a fight that I want, that I will probably win unless I can go sneaky. And if I have like something, some sort of like task required item that I have to extract with, I probably should choose to extract to finish that mission.
Right, but if it's one like Grenader, you're just running in there going, Aloha snack bar, and you're just suiciding it, fuck it.
Yes, for the PvP missions, like, oh hell yeah, like, we're gonna chase after those shots. Like, I am described as a Chad. I am also described as a sensitive Chad, because if I kill anything or anybody that's like lower than level 15, I will go out of my way to hide their stuff. Hopefully it's insured. See, I just take their tags.
That's just being kind. See, that's the hardest part about this game is I'm sure you remember your first wipe. I sure as fuck remember mine and how challenging and unforgiving this game can be. And it unfortunately turns people off to the community sometimes, especially when people get on Twitter and they see the community saying weird shit on Twitter. They see like the GOAT video and they assume everyone's cheating. So, you know, doing a nice thing like that can go a long way.
In my own, I don't have, sometimes I would message them or sometimes I don't, like, especially if I see like this Timmy, like, is looks like he's down bad or he's like really struggling and I ended up killing him, like, hey, I hid your stuff in a bush, I hope you get it back. I get like kind messages back.
Nice.
My VoIP interactions this wipe have been a lot more positive than last wipe. Like, back then I just VoIP, I get shot in the face immediately, but this wipe people have been like a lot kinder. We've ran into people and they're like, oh yeah, I'm helping my buddy here. It's like, okay, like, what do you need to do? So we would like help people out, either do their missions or we'll just let them go, or
nice,
if it's a scav, we'll extract with them.
I mean it's cool getting to actually use VoIP to actually use those co-op extracts. Like, I don't know how the fuck anyone extracted with co-op extracts before VoIP. Like, I know it happened, but my god, it must have been so difficult to convey all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Charlie, what is your favorite gun currently in game?
The RD.
Okay. And yes. What would you say is your, it's not your, your, it's your favorite gun, not because it's meta, because it has a special like place for you. Is it, do you have a gun like that?
The AKMN.
Is that because that's a gun you got your first kill with? Is that like a gun that you survived some like crazy encounter? Like, why is that gun special for you?
I think it's the very first gun that I was able to fully build and able to control. I think it was a turning point in my Tarkov gaming life wherein I felt like I have a gun that I'm comfortable running. I like how it feels and I somehow I'm able to get kills with it. And it's just, it turns into like this, how do I say this? Like, I know more, I felt like I know more about the game, or I'm starting to have a better understanding of the game versus just people helping me. Like, hey, Charlie, try this gun, or hey, Charlie, this is, try this meta build. Like, versus that, I'm not relying on, like, meta builds, or I'm not relying on meta guns.
Totally.
I have a gun. If I can't think of anything else, like this, I think this was on my second wipe. If I can't think of any gun, I was like, oh, I'll build my AKMN.
That is super customizable too, which is super cool. You can do a lot with that platform, which is sick.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, helps you learn a lot about the game. It's funny how we all play the same games, but we all have like similar experiences and different nostalgias about that game. Like, there's some people who are listening to this who might like Feet but hate the AKMN. They might have fought that gun. There might be people who are listening to that be like, I get that. I love the Keter or whatever. You know what I mean?
Personal thing for me, because it's like my biggest excitement about Tarkov is like I keep on learning because they keep on changing. Like, this wipe has been turbulent. We all know this, like all the changes, all the issues,
the audio,
cheating video. There's just so much, so many things happen, and this has been kind of the weirdest wipe that I've had. I know I haven't been in the Tarkov community long enough to have ever experienced the early Tarkov days where the game is really good and everybody enjoyed it.
Right.
But somehow I felt like I feel tired thinking about this wipe in all honesty, just because of everything else that had happened with it and around it, like community wise too.
It's totally understandable and relatable, and it's good to hear people that are Chads like express that, Because, like, if you're a new person in this community, it's good to be like, oh, it is frustrating, even for the people who have done this for a minute or a few years or every single wipe that there's ever been. Like, it's good to, like, it kind of humanizes the streamer. Because, you know, sometimes people will, like, see somebody playing a game, like, that person's chatted. This person doesn't experience the same hangups I do about the game. So it's cool to hear that from people who are establishing themselves in the community or establish themselves in the community who are really good at the game too, because it's just one of those things like, see, look, we all go through the same things, the same ups and downs when it comes to this gaming scene. It's how you roll with that. So my question is, how did you deal with that downslope?
Oh, my community kept me up. They are just the most supportive people. They're so encouraging. They have given me tips, and they have given me like either builds or the occasional, okay, she's down bad, she's like at 60 rubles already, so let's give her a kit, maybe it'll turn up. Or people are just like super nice. That's what kept me going,
right?
And how I deal with like the frustrations on my own was that, hey, it's just pixels, dude. At the end of the day, it's just pixels. It's a video game. It's you're never really at 0 rubles with your scav. I know some people don't like scaving, but what kept me afloat this wipe was scaving.
Right? Like, it's the best. That's like, oh, you're down bad? Just run this divide my cheeks scav and go get yourself some intelligence. You'll be fine.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's really all there is. And you're never at 0 rubles. They incorporated these things. Like, they incorporated the scav to be able to give you a chance to loot. And if you ever die as a scav or simply just not able to extract because of injuries or the timer, after X amount of minutes, you'll be back in.
Right.
And you have another chance to like get those rubles back. And learning the new map, like streets, is amazing. I have run offlines, and I scav streets to learn streets.
So, with that being said, what is your favorite map to PMC? And is it different from your favorite map to... what was your favorite map to scav?
Oh. So, favorite map to scav is... I think it's still a tie between woods and streets.
Okay.
But as a PMC, I will run woods all day.
I like woods.
I am so comfortable in the map.
It's a comfortability. There's such good loot spawns on woods, too. I feel woods gets overlooked on the awesome shit that you can find in it. I love that there's so much cover everywhere. There's a lot of places where you can conceal yourself. There's lots of ambush spots you can take advantage of if you're like an ambush type of player. Like, I try to be sometimes, but I'm too damn loud. It's like, what about woods appeals to you the most?
My best fights are in woods, and they're not even, like, long-range fights. These are, like, close-quarter fights. My best fights are on there. Like, that's where I'm able to, like, wipe out teams. Nice. Fight big groups, like, even on my own. Well, occasionally team kill also. Because I mean, they're like, when the call outs are just like, hey, where are you? I'm like, oh, I'm at this rock. I'm like, okay.
Which it's like, rock? I'm at the tree.
Exactly.
I'm behind something green. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I had just done that too the other day. It was so funny. I killed both my teammates and killed the other team. So only to be extra camped.
Oh, woods. That hurts.
Lovely.
That hurts.
So I got both Chads, like a team of Chads and a team of extra campers. It was heartbreaking, but you know what? That's the game.
What would you say is more satisfying, killing Chads or killing extra campers?
I think it's more satisfying to kill Chads because it gives me excitement. Because it's like chess, like, you have to make moves to either try to go around them, try to flank them.
Totally.
And it's a mind game for both of the players. That, like, all right, where can this person go? Or where can I have visual of this person?
Absolutely.
How can I get this? Yeah, I like that better. I think that's more satisfying.
You like the tactics, the movement, like, okay, if I go here, I can get the drop on him. Like, the thinking that goes with it.
Yep.
So, with that kind of gameplay mindset, are you excited for Arena? Because that seems like it would be right up your alley.
I want to. Okay, so Tarkov is the only FPS game that I spent more than 100 hours on. I am not an FPS gamer. So my background for gaming is either like I played League of Legends,
Dota, and then you said AoE, so you're an RTS gamer as well.
Yes, and I also play Street Fighter 4, so and MVC. So my background is more into fighting games. So I competed in Street Fighter in the Philippines.
Oh,
so that's my background.
Who was your Street Fighter character?
I was a Chun-Li and a Blanka main.
Okay. And what about the side-scrolling fighter of Street Fighter appealed to you as a kid? Was it just the accessibility because that game was everywhere? Was it the art style? Was it the movement? Like, what about it, like, captivated you?
So, in... the best thing about it is being able to try to predict your opponent's moves, being able to counter it, like, especially, like, doing all the timing for your combos, so satisfying.
Oh, I bet.
Like, if you guess what they're going to do next correctly, you have them. You really have them. So, especially for me that's playing a Blanka or a Chun-Li is notoriously just has, like, the lowest health in Street Fighter.
So you gotta be
I have to be smarter
with what you're
yeah
doing.
I have to be a lot more smarter with like my moves, and she hits really hard. Those thunder legs do not
they don't lie.
Yeah, they do a lot.
Oh, I was going to ask, out of all the Street Fighter characters, which one is your most annoying to fight? Are you like, oh, it's that
Vega.
Motherfucker with the stretchy arms?
It's going to be Vega, or it's probably going to be probably Zangief's.
Okay. So
it's because they're pretty tough.
When you say compete, did you go to like LAN events? Did you go to like big events in the Philippines or in the States? And how many of those did you compete in, if you can remember?
I competed in quite a few, like small run by our communities as well. They weren't as big as like esports now, because like gaming in the Philippines is not like an entertainment people will watch type of sports.
Right.
It's just like something from like the Street Fighter community would organize.
It's
never
niche.
Like televised. Yeah, exactly. And not really a lot of people like attended, except for like the people that you know, we play with as well. So it's kind of cool because the arcade scene in the Philippines is our social spaces.
Right. That's so cool, though.
Online
that it was
gaming.
Only you guys. So it's just like, it was probably a super big community, but at the same time, super small. Like everyone probably knew everybody.
Yes, exactly. And so each arcade, like in each city, like we would visit other arcades to have like friendly matches. And that's like our socialization. And since the Street Fighter community out there like came from like the MVC community, so you're expecting like kind of older people.
Right.
I was like maybe 17, 18 at that time when I competed. And the people that I'm playing with are like in their 20s. Some of them are already in their 30s. So they're like an older generation and they're just like super nice because they're mature. You're not like playing with like kids who are like, you know.
Totally. They're not elitist about their gaming or anything. They're like, I've been playing this since this first iteration. You're new, so I'm better than you. There's none of that bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
And people are just supportive there. I love the Street Fighter community out there. I have much love for them.
Now, if you could integrate anything from that community into the current online community of Twitter or Tarkov, what would be the one thing you wish you could carry over?
I'm experiencing a lot of similarities between the Tarkov community on Twitch, because I cannot speak for the other platforms because I just simply don't know.
Right.
People are just supportive. Like the moment that I started playing Tarkov, there are random people that would stop in chat and would help me out. And that's how I met like some of my friends and my Sherpas. I still consider them my Sherpas. They're amazing people. Nice. And that's how they found me. They're like, oh, mind if we help you with your mission? Like they saw me, I was soloing, or they see I was struggling. They're like, oh, we'll run with you. And like, okay, that's great.
That's the same thing
that I saw in Street Fighter. Yeah. So they're like, oh, why don't you try this? Why don't you try this combo? Or have you ever tried this combo on if this character attacks you this way? So it's, I kind of like it. Man, we can't have LAN parties with Tarkov. It's not really that.
At least not yet.
It depends. At least not yet. Yeah.
It depends how Arena plays. Because if Arena, let's say they made it like Tarkov meets Counter-Strike with like a 5v5 team and there's like a bomb you have to plan or some shit. Or, you know, imagine how cool that could be. Like, or just Arena being a simple kill match. If it gets big enough, it could become an esport and like, you know, LANs might become a thing later.
Yeah, exactly. And now I'm already seeing it. Like, people are starting up, like, smaller communities would start up, like, tournaments. They would make it into a theme. People are doing, like, charity tournaments. Like, with Tarkov, it's... I like that. There's really a lot of similarities. And I stayed playing Tarkov not just because of the game, but because of the community and how amazing people have been.
So,
to me,
from somebody coming from the competitive scene of a Street Fighter, do you want to be competitive with Tarkov in like a tournament scene, or is it one of those things where you're just going to take that competitive edge into raids as is?
Oh no, my reflexes and my reaction times are just a whole lot slower from when I was like in my teenage years. But I did compete in a charity tournament, which is actually really fun. We ended up second place on the PlayStream.
Hell yeah.
GG charity tournament, and that was really fun. If I were to do like tournaments, it would really only be for charity, or if it's like just offline friendly tournaments, but not on the scale of Evasion.
Right. So
like Evasion is a place in a space for the people that want their training to be really good at the game, or training fighting or shooting. Those are the spaces for them, and I truly support the people that who have given their time on Tarkov and wanted to be in those like elite,
right? I love it
competitive
when people
spaces.
Gain knowledge and then give that knowledge to the community in like the form of Sherpa-ing or just training and teaching. It's so lame when somebody learns something cool and then they just like, you know, keep that to themselves. So like only I will have this knowledge. You know, it's like it doesn't grow the community. Like it might make you a more competitive edge, but like where's the fun in that?
Exactly. So part of the community building too is like, hey, you're not at that point, you're just a streamer, right? Like people are just watching you and you're not really helping them. I mean, I could be completely wrong. There are really good players out there that are very entertaining to watch, but for content creators like me who are not really good at the game, I have potato aim. So the best that I can do is like, hey, I have check 15 key. I can run streets with you so I can open that door. I know how rare this key is or how expensive this key is.
Right.
But how I pay forward the kindness that I've gotten from the Tarkov community is by helping other people.
Like
do
as
their
we
missions.
Touched on, or you hide level below 20s gear when they die, when you kill them. Like that's just a cool way to give back.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. That's actually really sick. So
because I'm still bad, you know, I'm still bad, but at least I have something that can provide a service or can provide some help to other people. You know?
I think everybody who plays this game thinks they're bad.
Like, really?
Oh, yeah. Like, I've watched you play. You are not bad, but you like it's one of those things. It's like anything you spend your time on, people always just assume they're worse than what they are at it. Like, you're actually, like you said, people say you're a Chad. And I've seen some pretty dope Chad moments in stream because I lurk a lot. So I would not consider you a bad player. I'm just saying.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's no problem.
You hear that? You hear that? Listeners, I'm not that bad.
I'm not that bad. What a way to advocate for yourself. I think you're gonna take a much stronger stance than I'm not that bad.
I'm okay.
There
you
go.
Go.
World, it's funny. When I was in NCO, when I was in E6, I had a shirt that said "World's Most Okayest Soul Sailor." And I used to wear it on like mandatory fun days. Oh God, they hated that shirt, but I loved it. So, I digress. Getting back to the topic of gaming and whatnot. So, you said you were into AOE. So, RTSs, you know, they were big back when, you know, the computer age for gaming was young, but it's kind of died off. Like, you know, the ones back in the day, like the AOE, World of Warcraft 3, StarCraft. Like, yeah, there's StarCraft 2, but it's like, you know, a lot of time has passed and not a lot has been added to that genre. Now, do you have a favorite RTS game? And are you looking forward to any that might be coming out soon?
Not really for RTS games, because like League of Legends was really fun for me because I got to play with my friends, some family members, some of my cousins played it as well. My brother-in-law played it. So I always had like people to play with. And that was more fun to me until like League is notorious for being toxic now.
Unfortunately, but, yes.
Yeah. But it was easy to kind of avoid that because I was playing with people that I want to play with. Whatever the outcome of the game is, like, hey, it's a game. It's a free game. It's pixels.
Right.
We'll
you
be
only,
fine. Let's just match up again.
You spend money if you choose to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it was... So I took a break from gaming like when I moved out here in the United States because like stress and just learning how to kind of fit in, find my place here, and learn the culture.
Right, which was
that was
a
stressful part
shock
for me.
As we went over, yeah, yeah. Like just even.
And then
talking.
I joined the military. Yeah, exactly,
right.
And joined the military. So that really took a pause in like the gaming. And when I got back to it, like I got a laptop that was strong enough to like run League, and I started playing League of Legends, and I was like, oh. There goes like my love for gaming again. So I'm starting to feel like myself again in a space that I was not familiar with and I'm adjusting to.
Totally.
I think I can find myself again belonging here, you know.
So when it came to League, what kind of player were you? Were you like support? Were you a healer? Did you go in there and just get frag? What lane did you prefer? Like what was your play style?
I was mid lane. I was either mid or bottom as the ADC. When League just came out, I was a Malzahar main until they like nerfed him. I absolutely love him. I think the most I haven't touched League in like maybe a year or two, but the
Do
last one I learned was Illaoi.
For League, do you like just look at your computer and just get itchy for League?
No, not anymore. It's weird. It's weird, though.
So, someone who started with Dota and then going to League, did you find that League was easier? Because in Dota, like, some of those characters, you gotta be a damn near piano player to make work correctly. So, was it just like, did you feel like League was an easier version of it? Did you just like League more because it was more simple? Like, what was your feeling between the two?
I think League was a lot easier. But I felt like it was more fun because Dota was competitive in the Philippines. I didn't compete, but people get really butthurt in Dota.
Oh,
yeah. Dota community out there is like it can be a little too competitive to the point that it wasn't inviting or friendly.
Right. It was like all the worst parts of like the Street Fighter community amplified then without the benefits.
Yep.
Oh, that's not fun at all. But yeah, there's a game for everybody. I'm sure there's some people who just wake up when they choose violence every day and they just want it. They want the smoke. And by all means,
exactly.
Oh man. So yeah, now
and
I'm
video
thinking
games
of League.
Have been.
I haven't played League. Now I'm thinking of League. I haven't played League in forever. I'm probably gonna get hopelessly addicted now. Thanks a lot, Charlie.
Okay, League of Tarkov. When I'm down, if we're we can get a couple more Tarkov players in.
That might be so.
It's been a hot minute though, but I'm down.
That's okay. We can all be in the bottom ranks together. It'll be fine.
Yeah, we're gonna be in the wood tier together, holding hands.
The wood tier is the best tier.
With tier best tier, yeah.
Exactly. So when it came to you going through and learning Tarkov, now did you have Sherpas that ran you through? Did you get these and if you did, like, where did you meet them? Did you meet them naturally, or did you meet them off like a Discord page, like an evasion?
When I first started playing Tarkov, I was Sherpa'd by people that I met through Twitch, and I think I met them playing Phasmophobia. This is like early, early on when I started streaming.
Good old Phasma.
And they're like, oh, we're gonna play like shooting games. And I'm like, I'm not really a shooting game. And they're like, oh, okay, so we can see like if you like shooting games, so let's play Enlisted. So there's this like free World War II FPS game, and we started playing Enlisted, and I'm actually having fun. I was like, all right, I'm not really well versed in the, you know, WASD controlling here. I don't know how to reload and all that. So they, you know, I don't know how to aim. I had potato aim. I still have potato aim. And they saw that I enjoyed that. And one of my friends just said, like, oh, why don't you try Escape from Tarkov? I was like, oh, okay. Do you guys play that? They're like, oh, yeah, we play it all the time. And here I was like, oh, yeah, my friends play it too. So I just made the purchase. I got the base game, not knowing what Tarkov was all about. And then I got into the game. I was like, what's all this? So I went from Enlisted to Tarkov.
What a fast transition.
It was wild.
Enlisted was your gateway drug.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
And then not really knowing like how in-depth Tarkov is.
Right.
But
just,
I did it.
Healing. Just the ammo being used. That's a high mountain to climb when you're brand new.
Mm-hmm.
Going from Enlisted, it's just like, oh, only the medic can heal. Kind of thing to like, yeah, you're on your own. Good luck.
Exactly. I had to learn like, oh, there's different heals for different kinds of injuries. Like, what the heck? I was like, why is my guy coughing?
So
why am I bleeding?
What is happening? So this is another wonderful, serious question on the show. If you could hang out with any boss in Tarkov for one day, who would it be? And on the other side of the coin, if you could beat the absolute fuck out of any boss in Tarkov, who would it be?
If I can hang out with any boss in Tarkov, since I'm a woods main, I would like to say Sanitar. He resonates with me so much, just like kind of being a hermit, only have like a couple like really close friends like by him, and we want to protect our little space that's called the sawmill, and no one gets close to us because we, you know, I've
you
got
mean
this
Sturman? You said
Sherman's. I'm sorry. Sherman. Oh my god.
I was,
who did I say?
You said Sanitar, and I was like, I was thinking
did I say
you said,
you
said
no,
Sanitar. I was
that
thinking,
druggy can go fuck
that's
off.
That's what I was wondering. Like, you want to do drugs in the woods?
Yes,
that's cool.
No,
I guess.
That druggy can go fuck off. Like,
that's hilarious. It's like nobody likes Sanitar.
No. I'm sorry. I don't know why I said Sanitar, but I would hang out with Sherman.
Totally. He's the drippiest of them all. Like, why would you not?
I know. Exactly. No hate on the Shoreline mains, but goddamn, Shoreline is the worst map in Tarkov.
I think you've already kicked that beehive. I'm sure Tarkov Twitter will be very upset with you. Here at Castle Comms, we do not share the opinions of our guests all the time. Please do not come at us. So
hey, I don't like the map, but Shoreline mains I truly love. There are Shoreline mains that are absolutely amazing at that map. It's 1000% coming from a skill issue here.
I think you saved
it. It's not. It's just that. It's just absolutely. This is coming from just skill issue. Absolutely. I am not good in Shoreline. And I still don't like that map.
I think you made a good case there. I think they'll leave you alone. So, on the other side of all this, if you could hang out with any traitor and quest giver for a day, who would it be? Or if you could kick the shit out of any of them, which one would it be? And why?
Okay. Therapist has taken really good care of us. Like, I want to show her a good time. Not that may have come out wrong.
That came out perfectly. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. That may have come out wrong. But, you know, I want to hang out with her. I want to go, like, I don't know, let's go shopping for
you
drugs, Therapist.
You
want to
go drink Japanese liquor with snakes in it with her. You want to have the full
Yeah,
life.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, thank you. That's really what I meant. You know, she's taking a good care of us. I want to take her to a nice spa. I want to go drinking with her. I don't know.
What happens,
she'd be pretty cool to. Yeah, she'd be pretty cool to hang out with. I think so.
Absolutely.
Who do I want to kick? Who do I want to punch in the throat?
There's so many choices on this one.
That's actually true. Who gives out long line mission? Trying to remember.
I don't know.
Mechanic or? Is it mechanic or prepper?
See, it's for me, it's always between fucking mechanic and Jaeger, because Jaeger gives like the most painful dumb quests, but mechanic gives you the ones that are just like shooter born in heaven. Be like, oh, fuck yourself, mechanic.
I think it's only because of long line, and that's what's been causing me pain.
Totally. Oh, I'm still laughing about the Sanitar bit. That was crazy.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's all no, don't apologize. This is perfect. So, Charlie, speaking of the community, is there anybody out there in the community who you haven't met yet that you want to sometime in the future, and have this turn into something like a working relationship to do something like a charity event or a tournament or like a streaming thing? Is there anybody out there in the Tarkov scene you haven't worked with yet who you want to in the future?
And I have met my idols in the Tarkov community the last TwitchCon. Although most of them I have not really worked with or co-opted or collaborated with yet. But if there is one content creator that I absolutely have the biggest respect for, is Veritas.
Veritas, okay.
So, it would be Veritas. I know he doesn't play as much Tarkov now. He still does his like podcast with Jesse, and I am always there just listening in, like even when I have like work or editing, like in the just listening to them in the background. Like it's his insights are, I would always listen to it. I may not always agree with it, but he gives you an insight that you don't really think about. So
totally.
And he's such a good content creator. Yeah, he can give like information in like on all his like YouTubes. He's able to like give out a lot of information on the topics that he talks about, like in a way that it's very well researched. And he would not put it out if he did not put in the work for it.
Right. If he didn't stand by it.
Exactly.
He comes across as somebody who like genuinely loves what he does, and it comes across that he loves what he does, but also it generally feels like he's being completely honest, and he's not just like, you know, trying to take a stance for clout or for, you know, views or whatnot. It seems like what he's saying is coming from a genuine place of wanting to help or giving what knowledge he knows.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He's definitely a good one. If you're going to work with somebody in this scene, that's definitely a solid choice. Like, well,
yes.
Well selected. Now, was there something that drew you to his content initially? Was it just the streams or something of that nature? Or was it just by happenstance you came across him?
Like, I was watching Tarkov streamers on my first swipe. He is definitely one, you know, you're looking at, like, the top people that have, like, the most views and just see, like, their content. Like, Landmark, Jinji, Veritas, Stilly were like kind of like the staple ones that you would see right at the top.
Right.
And I was drawn really mostly to Veritas's and Gingy's streams, because Gingy's so good. She's so sweet. She's super nice. Her community is like very calm. Like I like that versus like having like way too much energy, because if you have it in the background and you're trying to like work or do something on the side, it's like, okay, it's a little distracting. There's a lot of stuff happening. Yeah, it's a little distracting. Even Veritas is the same way. Like his community is just very nice. Like I can easily follow like his gameplay. He does like tutorials. I've seen like his YouTubes, and it really helped me a lot. And yeah, I met him at TwitchCon too. Him and Gingy, both super sweet, both super nice.
So I was definitely starstruck to meet them in person, because you know, one of the things they always tell you, don't meet your heroes. Like, were you afraid you were going to meet them and they were going to be like mean or something like that, or did you not have that kind of fear going into it?
I was just afraid that, I don't know, like something in my brain just tells me like, oh yeah, they're big streamers. They're probably just going to say hi and just like, you know, go away, you know?
Right.
But then most of them knew me and I'm like, what? And like my reaction was like, what? Even Miss Ames, she's like, Charlie, I love your content. I was like, what? And so my heart just like, oh, okay, like the nervousness like went away. Like they're down to earth, they're super nice. Like all the nervousness and all my thoughts in the back of my brain just like went away.
That must have been super surreal.
How welcoming. Exactly, it was so much fun.
That is pretty dope. That's,
they're super nice.
That's one of those things where it's just like, you know, you watch these people, and then when they come across that they enjoy something you do, it's like shocking. Like, wait, you've heard of me? What? You've seen something I've actually done and you've liked it? What the fuck? I didn't think anyone like, you know, it's crazy when you get that kind of like validation from somebody who you respect in your field when you completely have no idea that they even know you exist.
Right. Exactly. And I was like, what? I didn't know how to process it, really, but I just felt, like, very much more at ease after, like, the very first few seconds of, like, meeting them. And I'm like, oh, man, these are, like, the people that taught me how to play Tarkov, like, if my Sherpas weren't on, you know?
Totally.
And them being, like, super nice and being very personable, like, you know, like, V and I were talking about chess before he got pulled away by Pestilli. And it was cool. It was actually really cool.
That is really sick. So, speaking of learning how to play, there might be some people who are listening who have never played Tarkov and are thinking about it. Or maybe even some people who have never streamed and are thinking about it. So, this question, it might be hard, but what would be the best advice you would give to somebody who's thinking about getting into streaming? And then, what is your best advice for somebody who might be thinking about getting into Tarkov?
So everything that I have done stream-wise, has been a trial and error. There are things that had worked. There are things that have not worked. But the number one thing that is my number one priority is to take care of your community. Like, community first before the viewers, because you want people to be in your chat, or you want people to be members of your community that are like-minded. They vibe the same way, because they have the ability to set the tone of your streams and your emotions and your mindset and your feelings in whatever it is that you're doing, whether or not I'm playing Tarkov or I'm playing Outer Wilds or I'm just chatting or playing some other variety games. Like, my chat is there to be supportive, either by lurking or just like learning about the game as I learn a new game. They're my backbone. Like, I have so much love for them with how nice and supportive they are of me and of each other. Right. I would just look over my chat and just see them like saying hi to each other. And like, you know, the boys are like mildly flirting with each other. And I love that. And take care of your community first. That is my number one thing.
The relationships that build in these channels is so cool. Like, you know, some people become really good friends. Some people meet in real life and you have like adventures. Fuck, some people get married on these things. Like who knows what scenario is going to play out? And it must be cool watching that like begin in your channel and like you develop.
I love it. And they find out that they live close to each other. They would go out and see each other or they would play games together. I would just see like they're in my Discord. They're like helping each other finish some missions. And I'm like, oh, you guys are so beautiful. You guys are so nice to each other. It's almost gross.
Just crying watching your Discord.
I'm so proud of them. Yes.
They're all grown up.
My little goblins. I love them.
That's hilarious. So it's one of those things in this community. I think it's impossible to meet a streamer who hasn't dealt with mental, you know, strain of this career choice or hobby choice for some. And it's one of those things that's really hard to get over or to find a way around it. And some people, you know, walk away from this whole thing because of it. So how would you, what would you be your best advice for somebody who's new and dealing with the strain of the mental health game of being a streamer?
It's a lie to say that I am not worried about the viewership when I start doing my variety streams. If people would like see, oh, Charlie's on, but she's not playing Tarkov. Like somehow you'd think that, oh, they're not going to click on your name. They're not going to go to your page or they're not going to watch you just because you're not playing Tarkov. I'd be lying if I said like, I'm not worried about it, but I have so much fun when I feel like I have the freedom to be able to play and be able to push out whatever content that I wanted to push out. Because your mood on stream translates over to the people that are watching you. Some people just don't know it, but people that watch you are paying attention. You know?
Totally.
If they feel like you're somehow... if you're irritated or you're just like jaded, they can tell.
Or if you have to pee, and they'll call that out sometimes.
And also, it's if you need to take some time off, like all you have to say, "Hey guys, I'm not feeling very well today," or "My mental health is not at its best. I'm not feeling 100% today." Like, be comfortable like giving yourself the time to be able to like gather yourself back up again.
Well said.
And people are always talking about like momentum. They're like, oh, you'll lose momentum. Like, no, the people that love you and support you will be there.
Right. But
and they're the ones that matter.
If your momentum is bringing you down in an emotional way or like a physical way in some cases, like then your momentum is meaningless because you can't sustain it.
Yep.
And it's only going to be harder for you to stop, kind of thing. Yeah, it's definitely a difficult thing people face, especially when they start to see that number go up and they're afraid, like, oh, if I take days off, like, they might not be around. Just like people are afraid to play games that are different from their main on stream sometimes. They're like, oh, maybe this number is people who are, like, Tarkov people, and they maybe won't hang out when I play a game, whatever.
I agree. So to me, it's like, hey, I played Outer Wilds. I still have the same people that are coming by on stream. They're like, they get scared with me or they would just like try to learn the game also. I would try to talk them into getting the game. I think one of the last games that I played that I absolutely love and is this game is slept on, Outer Wilds.
Yeah, tell us about Outer Wilds. I don't think I've ever, like, I saw that you were streaming it, but I don't know anything about it. So, yeah, let us in. Like, what is this game about?
Without trying to spoil anything, it is a puzzle space exploration game. So, you are a brand new pilot, and you're out exploring your system. And after a certain amount of minutes, the sun goes supernova. And you find yourself waking up the day of your first flight again. So you're stuck in an infinite time loop.
Oh, and as you go through, that would suck so bad, being grounded all day forever.
Yes. But as you go through the story or as you go through everything that you've experience in everything that you have found and put in your log, the more you kind of find out about the civilization that used to live in your system, you learn a little bit more about your species as well, and a little bit more about that phenomenon that happened. Nice. So I fell in love with the game because of the little elements in it and the puzzles.
Is it an
and the dialogues between like the aliens that used to occupy your system. And I will spoil it no longer because it is
no worries. Good. It sounds awesome. So is this like made by a bigger studio? Is this just like an indie game kind of thing on Steam?
I think it is an indie game. And it is on Steam.
Do you remember how much it was on Steam?
It was maybe like $35? Question mark?
Nice.
I think it was.
Nice.
It is really good.
And like,
it's a solo player game. It's so good.
So game the music in that game wise, is amazing. If you had to ballpark how many hours it would take for one to like beat the game or like, you know, do everything there is to do, what would you guesstimate that in-game time to be?
Oh, there's so many. I think I have given it like 40 hours already. I had given it 40 hours just like exploring and doing stuff, not just like doing the main storyline.
Totally. Yeah, when it comes to games like that, I always like, I love them, but oh man, I hate it when you purchase a game for like more than $20 and it's like, oh, I beat this in an hour. That's always so frustrating and annoying. So it's cool that it's so, like deep games like that are still in production. I'm excited for this. I'm going to look this one up.
So it's a lot to say. Like there, I don't know if any of your listeners might disagree.
Oh, I'm sure they do. But they're an argumentative bunch. They'll probably disagree, but that's fine. Fuck them. Let's see your take.
I love Shadow of the Colossus. I love Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess. This is a game that I wish I can experience for the first time.
Oh, again. Yeah. Shadow of the Colossus.
I know it's a cliche, but oh, no. I wish I can experience Outer Wilds for the first time again.
I mean, we all have those games in our memory that will just never leave of just, like, that epic, like, you know, aha moment in gaming. Whether it be your first, like, 3D game or open world game or just game that just clicked with you as a kid. Everybody has those few. So that's, yeah, that's a solid list, though. So yeah, Shadow of the Colossus was such a fun, awesome story. I wish they made more of them. And I actually heard, like, there's like a rumor I heard that it was actually in talks when they were talking about like making the next video game, like TV show, because, you know, there's more was going to pop off because The Last of Us. I've heard Dead Space get thrown around, and I've also heard Shadow of Colossus get thrown around. So, like, can you imagine that as an HBO series?
I would be down to like watch it. I'd be down to watch it if it is in works. Because I've never played Last of Us. And I watched the show.
Oh, it's so
and I
good.
Thought it was really good. It's making me want to play the game.
It's crazy how close it is to the game. Like there's videos on YouTube that show like the actual show and then the actual gameplay, and some of the cutscenes are almost like scene for scene. It's quite like, yeah, it's like that Freddie Mercury movie where he's they take his actual concert footage and they compare it to the movie, and it's hard to know what's the footage from like him actually doing it and what's the actor from the movie. So it's like that close. It's pretty dope in some moments.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. I want to play it now.
It's a great game. It's sad as fuck, as you've seen on the show.
Mm-hmm.
No spoilers.
Oh, episode 3, though, got me ugly. Was that episode 3?
Oh, you're ugly crying for that one? Yeah.
I was ugly crying for that one. I was like, I have emotional damage from that one. It was so beautifully made. It was so beautifully written.
That's why I'm happy HBO took the rails of that, because, you know, Netflix has taught us anything, they don't like keeping to the story, and they ruin it, things that are anime. That's what we've learned from Netflix.
Yes.
So I can only imagine what they would do with a video game thing. They'd probably either make it beautiful or it would suck. Nothing in between. So that being said, are you currently binging any show on Netflix or any streaming platform?
I've been watching Animal Control on Hulu. It's only, I think, 8 episodes long. It comes out every Thursdays.
Those are those
And it's just like
comedians,
a.
right? That's like The Office, but with animals, and it's like they always have funny banter about the animal. Is that the right show?
Yes. Yes.
I've seen
It's very
trailers for it.
lighthearted comedy. It's easy to watch. It's something that I can watch like right after work before I go game. It's a way for me to like hang out with the pets as well, like just on the couch, just like watching TV before I start like mate prepping food for work.
Totally. Now, do you have a favorite series, like a TV series from back in the day that you like revisit every now and again? Are you like a Firefly person? Are you like super into like any other like Band of Brothers or any show series like that?
Oh, you mentioned great shows, and also my heart breaks every time for Firefly.
How could it not?
How, right? How I got introduced to the show is like people were calling me River. I think this may have been like back in the Philippines. People were calling me River, River, River. I was like, why are you guys calling me River? I was like, oh, it's because of this TV show. Like, this girl looks just like you, a summer glow. And I looked at her, I was like, oh, God, no. She's gorgeous and we do not look alike. But I watched the show and got addicted, and only to find out that they canceled it after the first season and closed it off with Serenity. And oh gosh, and even Serenity was also heartbreaking. It was
Right.
good, but my
Yeah,
God,
I heard
Firefly is good.
they're talking about remaking that too, and it's just like as much as I would love to see the story continued, I don't want them to ruin it, you know? It's like one of those things where it's like, what if it's so bad it kills the original for me? I want to see if they make it, but at the same time I don't. Like, what's your take with the remake potential?
I'd say just leave it. I'd say just leave it. It's something that I look back to as like, all right, that show that broke my heart because they didn't add on to it anymore and they just closed it off with a movie. But you know what? That will just be a memory. I know it's a good show. It definitely had potential, but it's fine. The same feeling that I had with Sense8 from Netflix, wherein like all of these people from different parts of the world like have like telepathic powers, I guess,
Right.
and they can kind of connect to each other. Like I love that show, and then they canceled it. Arrested Development is an amazing show. Absolutely love it. And then Netflix took over. The season that they made was didn't really do it justice, so it's like, all right.
Yeah, that,
There are
yeah.
shows like that that I truly love, but unfortunately, they didn't make it.
It's like the new series of Arrested Development had its like funny moments, like when he's dressed up like the thing, and he accidentally goes to like the catch a predator thing. But for the most part, it was just like, man, I wish they would have just kept this where it was.
Exactly. Like, this comedy is so dry, and you really have to pay attention to Arrested Development. And it's one of those, it's weird. I have never had like a relationship with a show wherein I have, when you rewatch it, it gets better because you notice something. Oh, dude, like he's sitting on a hand and then he loses his hand later on to a loose seal. And then his mom's name is Lucille, his lover's name is Lucille. It's just so funny. Like, there's always money in the bananas. There's always so many lines in the show that I would kind of still incorporate in like
Everyday
conversations.
life, and
And
everybody gets
the
it.
people that, and not even everybody gets it. And it's like the people that get it, I was like, okay, we just became best friends now.
That's
You
awesome.
know?
That's very cool. Are you going to the TwitchCon in October in Vegas?
Yes, I would be there.
Are you kind of bummed being somebody in San Diego that they're not having it in San Diego this year because it was literally in your backyard?
Yeah, I walked to the last TwitchCon. I live so close to the convention center. I just walked it on all of the 3 days that it happened.
That's pretty dope.
That's how close I live there.
That doesn't get
It was
much better
actually
than
pretty
that.
cool.
You saved a shit ton of money. So, but are you
And then I
excited
can get
about,
drunk.
now you have a reason to go to Vegas, though, and that's always a fun thing.
Oh, that is true. I'm excited. I actually have not experienced Vegas nighttime. I'm not really into gambling, but I want to see shows. I want to eat. I want to just check out the food scene out there. I want to see my friends on Twitch as well, people that I have met in the previous TwitchCon and people that I will meet or have yet to meet.
Are
I'm
you
excited for that.
setting up a meet and greet with the people in your community?
Some of them that I have not met before have said that they are going, and I'm excited for that.
Hell yeah.
It's not really a meet or greet. Like, I haven't really organized anything because I don't really know Vegas. I guess, like, maybe I'll wing it, or maybe the closer we get to Vegas, like, I can ask around, like, hey, what's a good bar to check out? What's a good food place to check out? Like, I definitely want to
Just
set up a
like
meeting with the community members.
at the last TwitchCon, I didn't go, but I heard all about like the bar like meetup the whole Tarkov community had, and that like the stare photo they all had. So that's cool that like that potential is just there from people in the community that you haven't met who you might want to. They might just put out, be like, hey, we're all meeting at so and so, the Luxor or the fuck, insert random ass location in Vegas here. And then you just meet and network with all these people.
That would be amazing. I'm so proud of the Tarkov community during TwitchCon. We did such a great job with taking care of each other. Like, there were like issues at TwitchCon, but none of them came from the Tarkov community. Everyone got home safe. Everyone was having fun. People were just like being so supportive of each other. Everyone were equal. You
Right,
know,
totally.
partners to like affiliates to community members. We were all just like sharing tables, talking about the game, talking about life. It's great. It's amazing.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, like I'm going this year, so I'm excited to experience it because, it's it's one of those things where when you're part of the community, like you were with your Mortal Kombat, or when you are, I mean, sorry, Street Fighter, with you and your Street Fighter, you in the military, how you have those like connections and those bonds, and then when you leave those communities, you always kind of miss it. You know what I mean? You kind of miss being a part of that. So that's the cool thing about this. It's like regaining that community in a physical way. Like, yeah, you can meet these people online, but it's completely different when you're there, like having a drink or eating or actually like having a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. I felt like my social battery was completely depleted after TwitchCon, but my heart was so happy, if that makes any
No,
sense. Like,
totally. You were just
I'm
burnt
an
out, but you
introvert
were
and
stoked.
I was just so happy, but also I was just overstimulated. There's just so many people. And despite it being generally an uncomfortable scenario for me, being somebody who's like a lot more reserved, I was happy. I was like, I got to meet people, and I got to meet new people.
Right. And you got comfortable with
It
those people.
exactly. That was so much fun. Like, I look forward to seeing them again and meeting new people, and hopefully meet you.
Oh, that's definitely a potential. I will definitely be there. And
Hell yeah.
I'm short, but I'm pretty easy to spot.
How short are we talking
Oh,
about?
5'6".
Oh, what do you mean? I'm 5'2 and a half.
Okay, well, everyone I grew up with is like six
I'm short.
foot, so it's just like, God damn you. Oh, man. So, yeah, we've covered a lot of topics today, Charlie. Everything from TwitchCon to fucking drinking alcohol with snakes in it. So, before we call it a day, now is your time to say whatever it is you would like to say. Whether that's to thank somebody in your community, whether it's to plug an event like a charity thing, thank a sponsor. Now's your time to say whatever the fuck you want. The floor is yours.
I said this to my community so many times with how appreciative I am of them, like for the continued support and the growing support from all of the other streamers that would send their communities over. I don't know, my heart is full because of them. My heart is full because of my community. I thank you guys so much. I don't know how many more times I can thank you guys. I don't know what else I can do to like show that appreciation. They are the reason I keep doing this. and they are the reason why streaming and playing Tarkov and playing any other video games is fun for me. And it's because of them. The only other thing I can think of is Memorial Day is going to come up, and I am actually affiliated with Stack Up, the charitable organization for veterans. And what they aim to do is to alleviate the symptoms of PTSD and depression among service members all around the world. So they do like supply crates, they do 24-hour counseling, and they have like licensed counselors to be able to help out. And I had raised $2,000 last year.
That's huge. Congrats on that.
Thank you. We were able to send like a PlayStation, a couple of games, a headset to somebody in Texas who was in Iraq. He was in the army, and hopefully like he enjoys it, and hopefully we can do that again this year. And my first push for the year would be for Memorial Day weekend.
Nice.
And that's a Stack Up, yeah.
And do you have a time schedule for that? Like when you're thinking that's going to be going on? Like, is it going to be morning, midday, nighttime?
It might be a nighttime thing, like a late afternoon nighttime thing.
Totally. So once,
my normal hours, yeah.
Once that gets closer and you put out the tweet, we'll retweet that at Castle Comms. If you guys don't follow my advice, and go follow Charging Charlie, so that way you can get it directly from her. And we'll have the links for her stuff in the description. So if you want to go check out the Twitch, the TikTok, anything like that, the Twitter, feel free, click the like and follow, subscribe, you know, whatever the fuck. So all that being said, I would like to take this time to thank you, Charlie, for taking the time to coming on here and talking to a complete stranger, which is something that was completely taboo from, like, you know, your background is just randomly talking to strangers. Now you're fully integrated in there on a podcast, so you've come full circle.
Thank you so much for having me, and I had a great time, like, oh man, this is my first time on a podcast, like, thank you so much
for... Oh, you could have fooled me, you did great.
Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for having me. I listened to your content like before today, and everybody that you had featured on there are like good Twitch friends of mine, and I'm absolutely proud of them. And I would like to be part of that. So that's why I'm here.
It's definitely cool how many people have been nice enough to, you know, take the shot and come on the show. We've definitely had a lot of crazy, awesome people on here, and it's just like, yeah, every day I send out DMs. You know, I never know who's going to say yes and who's going to, like, you know, ghost me or say nothing. So I'm always stoked when I get that response back. So, yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to coming on here and talking to a complete stranger who's currently high and rambling. With that being said, I'm the infant nobody. Why don't you go the fuck outside and touch and or smoke some grass, and we'll catch you next time on the comms.